Hello and welcome to episode 196. Tonight's show is brought to you by Waxing Poetic. That's right, I'm going to talk a little bit about chain waxing tonight.
Oh boy.
Oh boy is right. So,
oh, I knew that was going to happen. Keep talking.
I haven't ridden. I went to Memphis to visit family. I drove there in my Subaru, and it was pretty good.
Any reason drove out there. You wanted to drive?
Well, two reasons. One, flying from my house is stupid. And two, it was actually marginally longer and definitely cheaper.
Yeah, fair enough. What's the closest, like, major airport to you?
Denver. So probably.
Well, Colorado Springs is closer, but I don't know if there's a direct flight.
There's not. I would drive 2 hours to Colorado Springs and then fly to Denver and then fly to Memphis, or drive probably 3:15, 3:30, depending on traffic, to Denver, and then pay for parking and get through security and get there and fly. And then when I get to the Memphis airport, I'm an hour from my parents' house without a car.
Yeah. So. No, all that stuff is, I'm on board too. Anytime I can drive, for the most part, I'll just drive. I just like being in charge of my own destiny. And because if it takes the same amount of time all in, even forgetting money for a second, if it's the same amount of time and I don't have to deal with the general public, why would I not just drive myself?
You don't have to sit in like a cabin full of other people's germs. Circulating, some kid sneezing behind you and kicking
recycled
your
farts.
Yeah,
recycled,
like, you can
farts.
Just sit there and fart in your own car and pick your nose and do all that stuff.
Well, and I had to take
granted, I guess people guns. Do that on airplanes too, so
I had to take some guns with me. So, by the way, some of the rap songs, sing-alongs I did in the car by myself definitely would have got me on a no-fly list. Yeah, and I took guns on the way out there, which, sure, you can fly with guns, but yeah, it's a whole nother layer of bullshit you have to deal with, and yeah.
Well, excellent. Did you have fun?
Oh, yeah, I had an outstanding time. That's the only way to describe it. It was outstanding.
Great.
I got to have some fun dinners and play some card games and give nieces and nephews money, because that's always fun to give young people, like, $10, and it's like you just gave them a car, you know? They're like, holy shit.
I think it's kind of like equal to if someone just gave you like $100 as an adult, like, damn, like, I can actually have some fun with that. You know, it's not like you're not rich, but like, you got $100. Like, you can have a good time with $100.
Yep. And in the space of roughly 24 hours, I got rid of 7 vehicles for my father. So.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was a really fun time. And let's see, I got to shoot some cool guns and thought we were going to shoot Tannerite, but we didn't.
Tannerite was expired.
Our Tannerite was past its good date, so. Turns out if you get Tannerite, don't save it for something cool. Something cool is right now. So,
how expired was it? Like, I'm kind of curious.
It doesn't have a date on it.
Like, how old did your dad think it was?
3 years.
Okay. I didn't know if it had been sitting on the shelf for like 10 years, but I didn't think Johnny would have Tannerite around that long.
I also didn't think it expired. It's like very basic stuff.
Well, it had definitely gotten.
Did it get like
wet?
Oh, okay.
Well, it didn't get rained on, or it's not like a basement leak or anything like that.
Well, it's so humid in Memphis.
It's just Memphis, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when you open the can, you're supposed to like pour it out. You had to like take a pocket knife and like crumble it out. And
gotcha.
Yeah.
We tried multiple ones, and then he had a lot of it. And when I say a lot of it, probably like.
Don't say pounds? Yeah. Don't say that. I was gonna say, don't say the number of pounds.
Probably 40.
I mean, it's not illegal to own that, right?
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, it's not.
Okay, well then, why can't you say how much you
yeah,
have?
Just,
you're not incriminating
probably
yourself.
Probably just not a great plan.
Nah.
I have 40 pounds. It's like saying I have 40 pounds of rice. Like
I have 40 pounds of bacon.
Yeah, but you
I have
know,
40 pounds of dog food. Yeah, like it's something you can go to the store and purchase legally and own. Like you're not.
Rice is not explosive.
Here's the thing, though. He didn't buy it. He got it from someone that got it from person A owed person B money. When person B did not give person A money. Wait, whatever. Somebody owed someone money. When they didn't get paid, he went and took his Tannerite and just was like, fuck you. We're even-ish. And then my dad got a bunch of it. And then, yeah.
There's definitely some like weird scientist dude on YouTube that explodes rice.
Oh, that's not what you think it is. That is ultra high pressure cooking with a unnecessarily violent pressure release. That's a totally different situation.
All right.
But yeah, and we thought we would get clever and find ones that were still like not clumpy and mix those. And after trying like four of them and none of them worked, we were like, okay, well, let's shoot a really big pistol. And that was our day of guns. So, yeah. Anyways, it was the type of trip where I was extremely excited to go. I was extremely excited to be there. And I'm extremely happy to be home. I think that's the best way to put it. Yeah. And let's see. Subaru works great. It's a great little car. Oh, so from the time I got on I-40 in Oklahoma until the time I got off of I-40 in Oklahoma, so that's driving from Oklahoma all the way to north of Memphis, a few little quick errands around town where my parents live, and then driving back all the way to Oklahoma, I drove 1,230 miles at an average of 67 miles per hour. With 30.9 miles per gallon. So it's a great little car.
Very cool.
And I should let y'all go because I listened to a bunch of podcasts and some of them were actually about bikes. And I have some fun things to talk about.
All right. Kenny, you want to go?
Sure. And Andrea, your volume may be high. Just heads up.
Okay.
Not like a ridiculous amount, but just some. Anyway,
Matt turned me down a little.
What have I been doing? I was sick for a week, unfortunately, so sorry, just got the flu. I don't get sick that often, which is nice, but when I do, it's usually the flu, and it's like every 3 years. And yeah, got the flu. I think the last time I was sick, really, other than maybe like a stuffy nose, was probably COVID, whenever COVID times were. But anyway, did you guys do a show or no?
Yeah, we did a kind of short one, but okay. We got one out.
Gotcha. Excellent.
And we took last week off. And
so I'm trying to think of all the things that I've been doing. I definitely rode moto a few times. I guess I'll just talk about the most recent stuff. Been riding more in a place called Dell, which is northwest, basically, of Salt Lake City. And it's just a cool spot. Bunch of mountain ranges. It's just unreal. I talk about it all the time. Just the amount. The pure volume of just off-roading and stuff you can do and places you can explore and you just don't really see other people, which is really cool for the most part. Yeah, it was a fun ride. It was hot, dusty for sure. Not the best time of the year to be out there. But I found some new stuff. I took the Ultra B because there's more enduro-y stuff that I was not super keen on doing on the Husky.
Have you gone back to the place with the rattlesnake?
No, I haven't been back there yet. I really need to see if I can complete that. But yeah, good call. I need to do that. But no, not back there. Where I was, though, definitely seemed, you can just kind of tell where rattlesnakes are going to hang out. And this definitely seemed to be a rattlesnakey place. So I was definitely on the lookout. And like, if I was going to come to a stop, just make sure there was like kind of grass on either side. Just, it was rattlesnake heaven, lots of rocks.
I saw a thumbnail for a YouTube video. I didn't watch it, but it was called Georgia Tin Flipping. Apparently, you hunt snakes that way. Like, you flip over pieces of metal that are just laying on the ground in the South, and you find snakes. Which is, that's definitely a valid way to find snakes in the South.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I don't know.
I wasn't trying to find them.
Yeah, I don't know if they were like shooting them or hitting them with a shovel or just looking at them and poking them with a stick and pissing them off. But yeah, Georgia tin flipping.
Okay.
Apparently that's a thing.
There you go. The more you know.
And For what it's worth, one of the projects I did with my dad was putting a new roof on his woodshed. And my grandmother had a house built next door, and all the leftover like metal roofing from her house he saved for doing this. And he had, like, before I got there, he had gotten them out and kind of been like, okay, these are the pieces I think we're going to use. Here's some scraps because one of them's going to be a little bit short, yada, yada. Anyways, he was like, we better get a hoe to turn those over. Might be a snake under there. And, like, sure enough, he's got his hand on his little, like, 22 revolver with rat shot in it.
By the way, Matt's dad, if you can imagine tactical Santa Claus, that's Matt's dad is, what are you, I can't tell if Matt's laughing or just facepalming really hard.
He's not tactical in any way, though. He doesn't buy into all that bullshit.
I know, but he's carrying a 22 with rat shot in it.
That's one of the guns he's carrying at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Tactical Santa Claus.
So anyway, back to moto stuff. Riding in Dell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did some exploring. Found some new spots, which is really cool. It's always fun to get on Google Maps and try to link stuff up and all that. I did find, so I got done riding. I did like a 2-hour ride. It was pretty hot. Got back in the car, had a fridge full of beer, and had a couple of beers, and started driving around in the middle of nowhere. And there is a freaking Air Force base out there. Like, I just started driving down this road. I'm like, this is a good road. And I drive down the road for like a long time, like 45 minutes. And it's kind of weaving up through the mountains. And then all of a sudden, there's a ginormous fence that's super straight. And yeah, some Air Force bomb range or something out there.
So you just like drove into an Air Force base.
I didn't say that. I drank a couple beers and then I drove.
How do you spell that town?
Delle. So find Dell and then go north like 45 miles. And you'll see what I'm talking about. But anyway, I drove up there and just rallied down this road. And you can go pretty fast on dirt roads and there's no one out there. And the faster you go, kind of the better it is until it's not. But had some fun, drove for a while, ended up making a huge loop. And then I got back to 15 and went the other direction just because I felt like it. Because I saw some maybe moto looking trails. And then I started accidentally wheeling the Ridgie. Like, wheeling it. Just, you know, you get confidence and it's like, oh, it's fine. And then I, like, you know, I'm down in first gear and I'm descending this. You know, I did scope it out first. Like, I hopped out and looked at it and I'm like, yeah, that fucker's steep. But, you know, she'll go down it. And went down this giant thing. It was relatively smooth. So I figured I could, like, get enough speed to come back up. But I was hoping I wouldn't have to come back up this thing. And that I could, like, I was scouting it out on the phone. It looked like I could go around this area. So anyway, I start wheeling. It gets gnarlier as things happen. And now it's getting like really gnarly. And I'm actually thinking like, well, shoot, I could get stuck out here. And I am actually in the middle of nowhere. I haven't seen a person for like 2 hours. So after probably 30 minutes of wheeling, I decide to turn around at a pretty nasty crux point and go back. And I did have to make it back up that giant first thing I came down. And almost didn't make it. So yeah, it was gnarly.
Put a winch on that bitch.
Yeah, I need a lot of things on it. This trail I was on was definitely a trail for something with lockers and 35s. And I am in a ridgeline with 30s.
Clearly is a trail for a ridgeline with 30s because you made it.
Yeah, but I keep them clean. Yeah, so almost didn't make it up this thing. Actually, traction was not an issue. Shockingly enough, the all-wheel drive is reasonable unless it's like really, really nasty off camber, like wheels off the ground stuff. And the tires are reasonably good and they're new. But just plain ran out of power. It was like at the bottom, first gear, and pretty much hit the bottom of it with speed, which is a good thing. Yep. I mean, I hit it at almost top of first. So probably 30 miles an hour just on the mat, and was pretty good about halfway up. And then it just started running out of power all the way at the top, like almost didn't crest it, which is pretty scary. And like, you straight up can't see anything. Like, the nose is just pointed at the sky. Yeah. And I'm like, well, might as fucking stay in it. And I did stay in it, and it barely got over the top. It was pretty crazy. I was on the torque converter hard at the top for sure.
Can I interrupt and give a almost didn't make it story?
Yeah, sure.
So we were moving a truck that hadn't been moved in a long time.
Uh-huh.
One of the tires was off the bead, and we couldn't get it to reseat because later comes to find out when it goes really flat and then dry rots on the ground, it's not going to hold air. So I am sitting in 87 short wheelbase single cab K10, so four-wheel drive Chevy truck, and there's not a window crank for that door. And the other window crank is properly affixed to the other door, so I can't use that one to roll the window down. But I don't know if there's going to be wasps in here, so I don't want to shut the door.
Oh, God.
So I am steering this, and it's one of the front tires that's, like, not inflating. So it's really hard to steer because it turns out when a car doesn't run and one of the tires is flat, there's no power steering, and it turns like dog ass. And my dad couldn't pull, like, so I'm trying to hold the door open with one foot, and I have my left foot is on the door. My right foot is on the clutch because this truck doesn't have brakes. And if things go bad, I'm just going to jam it in gear and drop the clutch and let it slide to a stop. And it won't pull the hill. Like, the tractor won't pull the hill. It, like, starts digging divots. And I just told my dad, I was like, we're pointing uphill so I can roll back down. I was like, and at this time I see the window crank sitting on the dash. I found it. So I rolled the window down. And I got out, and I was like, yo, just back me up all the way to there. I was like, and hit that bitch in second, wide open. And she went.
There you go.
Eventually. It took us two tries in second, but she went. So
the ending part of this story is, as I'm about to get back on I-15, because I, you know, end up doing outside of the gravel road stuff, which was perfectly fine. The wheeling portion of it was probably 45 minutes, and I got back to the highway. And before I'm going to go drive an hour back to Salt Lake, I figure I should probably, like, look under the car and make sure I didn't, you know, poke a hole in a transfer
Wait,
case or something. So
did you start in Dell and, like,
you went around the Great Salt, Salt Lake, basically?
No, so I started in Dell, and then go look at the map. I went north about 40 miles-ish, I'm guessing. And I went to the Air Force Base, which you'll see. And then I turned back and made a loop on a paved road back to I-15. And then I took a south loop of I-15 down in this kind of in the Dell area, but south of Dell. If you have a map up, I'm sure you'll find it.
I have a map up, and none of that makes
sense.
Yeah,
I don't see I don't see an Air Force base on the map.
Yeah, you got to go. You got to go way north.
Yeah, north. If I go straight north, I'm in the Great Salt Lake.
Well, maybe just go a little bit west, like just a couple miles west, and then go north. And you should see a very, very long fence/road-looking thing that pretty much goes east to west. And that is the line of the Air Force Base.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, we can discuss it later. Regardless, I decided to look under the car to make sure I hadn't poked a hole in anything. And it was all good, but definitely, you know, my front transfer case had taken some hits with some rocks, but it was holding oil, which is good. So anyway, that was a little sketchy. And then I didn't realize until I got all the way home and I was unloading the motorcycle. I'm like, why is my right peg fully, like, stuck in the I fell over position, like stuck up there? And I looked at the side of my bed, and apparently the motorcycle had almost completely jumped out of the back of the ridgeline. Like, I hit something at some point during one of those hill climbs, or who knows what, stuff bouncing around, that the back wheel went up high enough in the air that the entire back wheel almost came up over the side of the truck. So I gouged a huge, it's just plastic, but I gouged a huge thing in the bed. And because I'm a pretty cautious person when it comes to tying stuff down, so I've got, like, a proper wheel chock in there with, like, proper straps. So the front of the motorcycle is not going anywhere no matter what. Like, you could roll the car and the motorcycle's still going to be in there. And then the back, because stuff does bounce around, I have a limit strap that goes through the swing arm, so it can't, like, go too far left or right. And it could, in theory, it turns out, it can also stop the motorcycle from going vertical. I never thought that was going to be a problem. But during that excursion, where the peg went up over the side of the vehicle. It did it so violently that I actually bent the mounting point for my tailgate that the limit strap was strapped to, which is a very large piece of metal. So it was, there was some violence going on, but it got fixed with a sledgehammer and we're all good. Other than that, played a little bit of golf and I got the SV. I got the SV in a more state of running. So I got the freeze plugs all back in the motor, got them all epoxied in there. And
wait, I thought one was lost in the Never Never Land.
Yeah, I was able to get it out. I don't know if I explained it on another show, how I got it out. But yeah, I used a magnet to hold it in place because it's the only piece of steel in there. Everything else is aluminum. So I held it in place and then I used a punch to deform what was left of that freeze plug. And then I was able to pull it back through.
Oh, kind of like when you bend like a bottle cap in half type thing.
Exactly. And it's about the size of a bottle cap basically. So imagine a bottle cap, but it's 10 times as thick and made of steel. But I was able to deform it just enough to get it out.
I think bottle caps are steel.
It's possible. It is possible. I think you're right.
I don't think they're titanium.
Yeah, they could be like tin or some garbage. So the SV is running better now. It idles pretty happily, but just buttoning up all kinds of weird electrical gremlins and carb gremlins and all that kind of stuff. It needs a fuel pump and it's doing all kinds of weird stuff. But I think the bones are pretty good. So I'll continue to mess with that. I think that's pretty much it for me.
All right. Well, it's been a hell of a 2 weeks for me. I don't know. Did Matt, when we recorded, did I talk about surgery getting rescheduled? Well,
probably.
Okay. I don't remember.
You got your surgery rescheduled on a Tuesday.
Yeah. So we probably did, but so I was supposed to have surgery today on my hand, and I didn't because a couple weeks ago they called and said my doctor had had an emergency, and so they had to reschedule my surgery for July 25th. And I said I'm in a great deal of pain, and the medication that I take to keep it from totally killing me is making me feel terrible. So can I get a cortisone injection? And they said, sure. And I went and got that, I guess a week ago. Yeah, it was a week ago I got that in my right wrist, and it has helped immensely. And I actually went, since the left side has been hurting some, not as bad as the right side, since it's also been hurting, I went the next Tuesday and got the left one done, and I've been pretty comfortable, which is great physically. And I've had much more energy. Gabapentin it's effective for nerve pain like that, but it was making me massively depressed, and I didn't have any energy or will to live. And luckily, I've been able to stop taking it, and I tapered down like the doctor told me to do. And on the flip side, now I have a hard time sleeping, and I have anxiety.
Welcome to the Thunderdome.
Like, the first night that it happened, Matt was at his parents, and I was just sitting in bed, and I'm just, like, worried. And I don't even, like, I was like, what the fuck am I worried about? And I'm going through, like, my mental checklist, and I'm like, nothing. Like, there's literally no reason for me to be worried. And it happened again today. Like, today I was just, like just anxious, and I'm like, why? There's nothing. Like, it's a relaxing day at home. There's nothing to be anxious about. And no, like, it's just a withdrawal symptom of gabapentin, is you can't sleep and you have anxiety. So it's been a fun few days, but other than that, I mean, I'd rather have that than how it was making me feeling while I was taking it. So it's not the best trade-off, but it is. I'm on the better end of the deal now, so that's good. But I built a deck for my truck, a sleeping platform. I had just taken the lower. So in a 4Runner, they have like a fold-down rear seat, and it's a two-piece thing. Like, the the part you, your butt goes on flips forward and then the seat back folds down. And I had taken the lower portion of the seat out in the back and had not taken the fold down top part out. And then Matt used my truck to bring a wood chipper home and some fuel leaked out into one of my seats. Like it leaked all the way through the seat, through the back, and into the floorboard.
Wait. For the record, before I left, you told me, just take my truck.
Yeah, I know. I told you to do it. I'm not mad about it because I have more.
I just need that in the public.
Matt's an idiot. It's not Matt's fault. He needed to get a wood chipper, and it's like, take my truck. It's comfortable.
Would a wood chipper be better on a trailer, perhaps?
Yeah, possibly.
It is fun. Putting stuff in cars that it's not supposed to be in is fun. Somewhere I have a picture of a full-size keg in the back of the Daewoo.
You have to understand, Kenny, that my truck was full of recycling and my trailer was piled up with limbs. And it's like that needed to be taken to the dump. And it's like, here's a wood chipper for sale. If I just go buy that, I won't have like to haul limbs anymore. Well, turns out you'll just leak gas into a 4Runner, and wood chippers that you buy are terrible, and they take a very long time to chip anything.
Yeah, so took the rest of the seats out, and
the back seats.
Yeah, the back seats.
She's not just riding around on a milk crate.
I'd like to be able to take the passenger seat out, but apparently it'll throw like a pretty bad airbag code if you take that out and don't do some electronic relay jumper type stuff with the airbag switch, but it's not that important. What?
Do you have any idea how heavy a front seat is and how much space it would take up?
Not if you, I don't know, wait till it snows and just light it on fire in the driveway. What?
So I could never go with you in your car again. Who would drive you up Hayden Pass?
That's a good point. All right. Well, I built a new platform because just the way that the back end is shaped, without the backs of the seats in there, I wouldn't have had a place to camp in there. And I really like camping in my truck. So I built a platform and it's pretty fucking sweet. It's nice. It's a little like I have a better platform now for like where my pillow goes or where my feet go. You know, they were just kind of on like an action packer, like a tote that went behind the passenger seat. But yeah, now it's like the tote and a little bit of extra platform around it. And yeah, it's going to be nice. I'm looking forward to using it pretty soon. What else have I done? Lots of gardening. My garden is fucking ripping right now. Like it's hot now and I'm dying because of the heat. I no longer have the heat tolerance that I used to, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. As soon as it's over 65 degrees, I am just absolutely fucking melting. So, yeah, I need to go camp up high somewhere. But, yeah, the garden's really happy about the heat. Little chickens are doing good. Little meat bird chickens. And they're getting fat. And, yeah, that's kind of it. I rode my bike. So, yeah, like 2 days after the cortisone injection, I'm like, well, my hand feels like almost normal. And so I'm going to go for a bike ride. So I went and I rode my single speed and it was all right. It's weird because I rode some Rainbow Trail up near Salida where the Rainbow Trail is actually like, I don't know, groomed a little bit better for bikes, not just motos. And I've done a bunch of like elk scouting and hiking off the trail in that area. And it's really weird because all of a sudden you're on a bike and you're just, I haven't ridden in so long. It's like you're just kind of confined to like this little strip of dirt. And yeah, like the Rainbow Trail is cool and it's 100 miles long and that's really awesome. But I don't know, like I could park my bike and go hike 5 miles and I wouldn't see another human being the entire, like I went out for a hike off trail, like in a similar area where I don't know, you would expect to see lots of people on Memorial Day, and I saw zero people because I just went up into the woods. And I don't know, I've done so much like adventuring that now like I go and ride you know, I went and rode my bike, and I'm like, that was exercise. It was kind of nice. But I don't know. Maybe not quite as much fun as what I used to have on a bike, but I'm not going to, like, quit riding or anything. But, you know, just keeping it real, letting everyone know that first bike ride back, and I was kind of like, oh, that was nice. But still, still got to do a little shopping and get a new full suspension bike to replace the Mayhem. That's about it for me.
New shit.
Time for some new shit.
Mm-hmm. I have an industry thing that I think is, well, do we want to do new shit or industry news?
Whatever.
They're kind of one and the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I have a few thoughts. This might make people angry. I don't know. When I'll just say it. And then if companies or people want to get mad at me, that's fine. I'm going to leave out a name. Everybody can probably figure out what it is. It's not really the point here even. It's just weird and it seems a little bit tone deaf. And you guys can come back and say that I'm an idiot or whatever you want. But I got an email, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, from a manufacturer who said, a manufacturer who says they're typically say it says they're pretty proud of making stuff in the US. And I get an email from them saying, well, one of our more popular products is going to be made overseas. I assume China, but I don't know exactly where. It's going to be made overseas now. And they gave some reasons why, like, I don't know, some things are, the current tooling here is wearing out or something. And so we're going to move it over there. Or maybe they're going to change the product line soon. I'm not quite sure. But they're going to move a substantial amount of production overseas. And then a week later, pretty much exactly, and I don't know if it was because of backlash of them announcing that, but a week later they put out an email saying how proud they are and why everything they make is made in the USA. And that's really weird.
Even though they're not making everything in the USA?
Well, they've never made everything in the USA, even though in the past they've said that. But even more of their stuff is not going to be made in the USA. And then they go on this whole very detailed, with a zillion pictures and all this kind of stuff, just a marketing thing. And I don't know if it was public facing or not, to be honest, maybe it is. But regardless, they went through like a lot of lengths and a lot of time to say why it's amazing that they make stuff in the US. And it just seemed weird to me. Am I crazy? It's not that you can't make stuff. It's not that you can't make stuff everywhere else.
It would help if I knew
who it was. Yeah, it's for now.
You can say
for
say
now.
It
no, for now
I
it's
know
irrelevant.
Who it is.
We can talk about it after the show. For now it's irrelevant.
Oh, Matt's going to show. He's going to like type it on his phone
yeah.
and show me who it
yeah.
is. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
It's just weird. Care. It's just weird. Why? Just don't even talk about it then. If you just don't talk about it, then it's fine. But it's that they want to me, it feels like they're trying to leverage the look at us, we're made in the USA thing only when it's convenient. And then they want to gloss over it when it's not. It's just weird. I feel like they want the best of both worlds and they don't want any negativity about making stuff overseas. It's fine to make stuff overseas. The vast majority of bicycle stuff is made overseas. Would it be cool if everything is made here? Yeah, but we all understand basic economics that that's not always possible. So I'm not personally that everything has to be made in the USA, banging my chest. That's not it at all. It's the way in which they try to twist the public, in my opinion, to make it appear as if everything is made in the USA, and it's clearly not. And going even more so, actually, probably in the future, but they just want to say how amazing it is that everything's made in the USA. So I just think that's weird. That's all. So we'll leave it there.
Yeah. I am also annoyed by that kind of, I don't know, by the same thing you're annoyed by. And I also give absolutely no fucks if something is not made in the USA.
Percent. But the thing to me, the reason that it really, I perked up, the first announcement,
grind your gears.
The first announcement didn't really bother me. It's like, okay, fine, that's reasonable. But 1 week later, they clearly went through a lot of effort to say, look at us, we're made in the USA. And it's like, what the fuck? You guys just told me that you're moving a huge portion of your production overseas. So, yeah, weird. If they didn't send the second email, I wouldn't even be talking about this. All right, other stuff, big industry news. We are one in Industry 9. I think that's fairly big news. Have you,
so is
have
it,
you seen this in, news?
Is it we are Industry 10 composites?
Great question.
9+.
It definitely was not a well-kept secret. I think I alluded to it at some point. I heard about it through the grapevine 4 months ago or something. It was like a long time ago. But anyway, yeah, what does it actually mean in the day-to-day operations and product lines and all that? I have no idea. But it sounds to me, from what I can tell, Industry 9 basically bought We Are One. Are they going to keep the We Are One production in Canada? No idea. Are they just going to be, are they going to run exactly like they are today, but they'll have even more obvious inner collaborations? Maybe. I don't know. Is it just simply that i9 wants to build, get their carbon rim hoops built by We Are One exclusively? Like that's what they do. And that all wheels are going to come with their hubs. So it's kind of a symbiotic relationship. And that's it. And they're going to leave all production and all the other kind of operational stuff the same. No idea. So it's interesting. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. It seems like a good idea. Wasn't Industry 9 getting Reynolds rims?
For the longest time, yeah.
Yeah, they
collaborated with Reynolds a lot. And who else did they use? There was conjecture that I think some of the maybe rims that were nine carbon rims that maybe didn't have any branding on them were possibly a We Are One product, mm-hmm. which would make more sense now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense if you're a hub company and they're also a wheel company. I think most well known for their hubs because I don't know, that's just smart business. You can't just make fancy aluminum spoke weird wheels and expect like have as big of a target audience as you would if you just sold hubs on their own. But I think now, like, I don't know, that probably just makes it easier for them to just have their own branded stuff instead of being like, oh, we're going to get some Reynolds and then we might get these other shit. Reynolds is out of these. We're going to get a run of something. I don't know if that actually happened with them or not. Like if they, you know, kind of had to just get carbon rims from wherever they could get them. But to just have a company that's already a pretty well-known company for carbon wheels, I think that makes sense.
I wonder if We Are One has a bearing engineer they can borrow.
They should just hire you as their bearing engineer.
Yeah, I can solve that problem in about 10 minutes.
That'll cost $1 million.
Yeah.
I'm out.
10 minutes, $1 million. I'm out. Other big one? XTR?
Yeah. Got to, and I'm sure, Kenny, I don't know if you've had a rep stop by your shop. I mean, they probably stopped or talked to you before the guy here in Slida came through our shop.
Yeah, like, I mean,
laid hands on it.
Yeah, we pre-ordered it and everything, so we had it, I don't know, a couple days maybe before it came out. So yeah. Kind of standard stuff in the biz. But yeah. I messed with it. I rode it on a demo bike and we got a few groupos in and we set them up and updated them and did all that kind of stuff. And initial impressions are, I guess let's talk about some positives. Again, I haven't ridden it. Don't know anything long term. So I guess we'll do a couple of breakdown things and you guys feel free to add stuff that I'm forgetting. Obviously, everyone probably knows about this. At this point, we're a little bit late because of show recording cadence. But it does not use a UDH. It's just like a bolt-on derailleur. It's fully wireless now, so the battery goes in the derailleur and then wirelessly talks to the shifter. My understanding is if you have a newer 12-speed, I guess, road setup, you can mullet the shifters. So, of course, those road shifters, even though the battery is connected to the derailleurs, if you have the shifters, they're wireless. So those shifters should talk to that rear derailleur if you want to run a mullet setup. Have you heard differently?
I didn't get to hear the technical stuff on it because I was like working. I work 2 days a week. It's not like I don't like go in and have to like settle in and, you know, I don't know, like work at a normal pace. Like I work like I need to get a lot of work done in 2 days. So I was busy. And I think I heard someone say something about it, and I ran over and looked at it and rode it around the block and took it back. I asked the rep. This is like my one thing that I didn't like that might have, I don't know, some problems in the future, possibly, maybe not. I asked him, I said, so what have you guys done, or did they do anything about how the oil will leak out of the master cylinder?
That's very, I am glad he brought that up.
He looked at me like a deer in the fucking headlights. His eyes doubled in size and he looked straight at me and he's like, what? It's like I just said, hey man, I saw your dog outside and I kicked it. Like, he looked at me like that. Like, why?
Well, that guy's been with Shimano forever. He is the Kool-Aid. He doesn't just drink it. He, like, swims in it.
And I...
He puts it in his hair.
Well, like, and I had, like, my shop apron on, and I keep, like, a pen-sized flashlight in one of the pockets. And I was like, you know how, like... So I was like, so a customer brings their bike in. They say, I need my brake bled. The first thing that you do when you write service for a Shimano brake that needs to be bled suddenly is you take your... And I, like, took the light out of my pocket... And I shine it right here, and there's oil leaking out. Have they done anything about that? And he's like, I don't have any longevity testing.
Well, no shit, Sherlock. You never have.
Okay, we're gonna get into that in a minute. I'm really glad Andrea brought that up, because we'll get into that in a second. But I said the exact same thing and got the exact same response, and I also have another one after that, which is very entertaining and funny. So back to XTR and, like, the derailleur piece of it. The big takeaways are fully wireless now. The cage sits, like, you know, tucked up more than some other ones, which I think is a legitimately good thing. I think from, like, a rock strike standpoint and everything, they're doing everything they can to get that thing out of harm's way. I'm actually neither here nor there on the UDH thing. I think UDH is a really cool idea. Is it completely necessary to make a bike work? No, clearly not. I have been perfectly happy with derailleur hangers for the longest time. Can you bend them or break them? Yeah. Keep a freaking spare in your Camelback. It's like no big deal. I personally think I'm more scared of transmission than I am of a traditional derailleur hanger, because it's way more convenient and easy for me to carry a hanger in my pack than it is a new cage. So that's my perspective on it. But it's kind of sixes to me. They both have their positives. The shift quality seems to be reasonably good. It's not 13 speed. It's just 12 speed.
Wait, is when you say it's sixes to me, is that an actual saying, or were you trying to say it's six of one, half dozen of the other?
No, it's sixes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard that, but it made sense, but I just never heard it.
That's how I've heard the saying. I could be wrong. We can look it up later. But anyway, quality-wise, shift quality-wise, all that great. We're not getting a whole lot of extra.
I thought it was good, too. Matt, I don't know what – Matt's like, it shifts terrible.
Was it perfect?
What are you talking about?
Was it perfect? No, there's a lot of things about this here, though. So a couple things, couple takeaways. Apparently, out of the box, it's set up for least common denominator, which is e-bike speed. So it shifts ultra slow. You can just change it in the app. So keep that in mind. And I think it even changes how fast it shifts in certain gears. All that stuff is programmable. I haven't personally played with that, but the bike that I rode seemed to be reasonable as far as speed. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. It was, and I'm going to get it backwards. It's foggy because I rode the bike one time. It was definitely way faster to shift one direction than the other. I want to say that, like, shifting down to a harder gear seemed reasonable and, like, halfway decent under power. Probably still not as good as transmission. But shifting up to an easier gear, if I remember right, was pretty clunky. But it was reasonable. I didn't get on it and go, oh yeah, this is garbage. It was perfectly reasonable in my opinion.
I 100% did. And I'll tell you how it pissed me off and why it pissed me off.
Okay.
Which is, everyone on the internet says that transmission shifts too slow. Well, guess what I did on the XTR bike? Went out, and also, real quick, just don't bring by your sample bike for everyone to ride with fucking SPDs on it. That's stupid.
Got to show off the new pedals.
But number two, it's just too fast. Like, it shifts too fast. I don't think the people at SRAM were like, boy, Our regular eagle axis shifts so well when you shift really fast that we're going to slow this one down just to piss people off when we make the new one. And yeah, I shift a gear, not, you know, in car terms, not lifting, you know, leave power down. It's fine. And then I was down near the 10 and I grabbed both brakes and held the multi-shift button to go back up towards the 51. And it did old axis shit. Like, I wasn't pedaling hard, but I was, like, again, holding both brakes to keep it, like, under tension. And it just did the... Like, fuck, even Q's doesn't do that. Like, Christ.
Well, in my opinion, I think anything multi-shift is the dumbest shit in the world. I've talked about this 1,000 times. Why the fuck do you want it to shift a random amount of gears? I'm just going to hold this button down and fucking hope for the best. Why in the world would anyone do that? Like, oh, fuck a hill, hold the fucking down and it's just going to end up where it ends up. Are you an insane person? Jesus Christ. Like, be like, okay, I'm kind of in the wrong gear. I'm going to shift 2, maybe 3 gears. Do that. Go 1, 2, 3. And what I'm getting at is you can still have it set to shift quickly, but have it a discrete click. So one click is one shift. I don't want to, that's like so jacked up to me. It's like holding down a trigger on a gun and like sometimes it shoots once and sometimes if you hold it down a little longer, it shoots a shitload of times. Like I understand that's fully automatic, but like if you're trying to be semi-precise with a gun, you probably don't want to be only in fully automatic. It's not a good place to be. So I just think all that shit should go away completely. I think it's a dumb option. I know that if I owned it, I would just turn off multi-shift or whatever the hell they're calling it. In my DI 2 days, I immediately turn that off because it's going to get you in a ton of trouble.
Can we talk about the shifter for a second? Because I feel
we're going to talk about everything. But yes, let's talk about the shifter.
So, I mean, I felt like, and I didn't do what Matt did. I didn't like try to like hold the brakes and multi-shift it to a lower gear. I felt like it was as good as, I feel like it was very equal to any SRAM product. I feel like the shifter blows anything that SRAM has ever made for electronic shifting just all the way out of the water. Like it's so much, it has like, it feels like the click of an actual gear.
It's definitely very clicky and takes a little bit of force, but in a good way.
Well, also yeah. That's something that kind of pissed me off because our rep comes in. And, like, I just walk in when the spiel is being given to the buyer, and he's like, yeah, we have a real shifter. It's not some mouse click button crap. And I'm like, oh, cool. Your new shit that you took 6 or 7 years to launch is so good. The only way you can talk good about it is to bash someone else's product.
Yeah,
I definitely don't like that either. And I'm going to say I turned the corner for sure. It's probably because I spent a lot of time on it. I really didn't mind the whatever you call it, first generation axis shifter, where you just kind of like placed your thumb in the trough and you kind of like went up and down. I thought it was actually perfectly reasonable. I thought that ergonomically that was perfectly good. I actually prefer that over the clicky button version of that. The pod is like okay because you can definitely feel it's very discreet. Like you kind of know where you're at. But I kind of like the Rocky paddle. I just got used to it.
Yeah, I liked the paddle too. The only time I had problems with it was on really rough roads. I'd go to shift one gear and like the vibration of the road would and not like multi-shift, but like it would vibrate my thumb against the shifter and make it shift more times than I wanted to shift.
Yeah, that happened to me a number of times for sure, but it wasn't a huge deal. I just kind of got used to it, but I liked it. I guess I'm not picky. I'm more picky on being able to position the shifter ergonomically where I want it, but not so much about the shifter itself, if that makes sense. I can get along. I'm going to get used to a SRAM mechanical. I've ridden those. I like those. Just the old traditional like Eagle XO, nice crisp shifter. That's perfectly fine. Old Shimano, like 10 speed. Those were perfectly good. That's what I grew up on, are like the 8, 9, and 10 speed Shimano ones. Even the ones where you could like do the old reach around with the index finger and downshift from the front as well. That was perfectly good. Yeah, obviously the Axis Rocker's fine. I think the Axis Pod is totally fine. The new XTR, also totally fine. To be honest, the only shifter that I don't like, and it's more just an issue of the entire system, I don't like mechanical 12 speed Shimano. it's clunky, but in a bad way.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, their 11 and 12 speed mechanical stuff just, they peaked at 10 speed, and hopefully yes. this will bring them back. I mean, it's like we've been saying, like having competition is good. And, you know, we're big fans of SRAM, but I'm not going to be like, just because I like SRAM so much, I'm going to say that this new Shimano stuff sucks, but.
Competition is good. I want Shimano to succeed. Unfortunately, we've been poking them with a stick for about 6 years and there hasn't been a whole lot of movement. Yeah. So I was definitely worried.
Come on, do something.
I was worried they were dead there for a minute. Other takeaways from XTR. Two derailleur cage lengths. They make a long cage, which is a 1051. And then they make a new short cage. And they make a new cassette with a friggin' 9-tooth. So 945 on that one. Pretty crazy. Mm. Takes a special tool. So be aware.
I wasn't around for like the spiel on it. I just asked my couple of questions and went back to work. But that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So if you want the lightest weight option, that's the one to get. And you're going to get the most ground clearance as well that way. They do warn that certain bikes, maybe with like a 28 tooth on the front, if you try to get down into the 9, your chain might sit on a chainstay in a way that it doesn't mesh with the gears properly anymore. So be aware that could be an issue.
Some bikes, most bikes.
Probably most bikes. I don't know.
Don't. I'm telling listeners at land right now, don't put it on a Stump Jumper 14. They didn't call it that, but a Stumpy 14. 100% not compatible with a 28.
Yeah, a 28 didn't work with a 10 on those bikes. So with a 9, that ain't going to work. Totally agree. What other takeaways can I think of? New brakes. So yeah, we can get into talking about this a little bit more. That's the first thing I said when it got unveiled to me, and I got blank stares. And they told me that they've never heard of Leaky Master Cylinder before. Dead serious.
Oh, well,
that was the quote.
This guy, like, after
we have
after
never
I
heard of that.
Yeah, after I explained it to him, he was like, "Oh, yeah, I don't have any longevity data, so I don't know."
To me, they straight out denied it. To me, straight up denied that was a problem. I just so many times, just like the specialized pricing thing, where they just discount bikes that you can't buy anymore, and they just leave that price on their website, and then pissed off customers wonder why I can't sell a bike for that price. And I just want to have the rep in the store, and I want them to deal with that customer and explain why things are the way that they are. Much in the same way that I want to have Shimano, a rep, in there and check in at least once a day, just in my location, I check in a pair of Leaky Master Cylinder Shimano brakes.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I've worked 2 days a week. I've probably worked fewer than 10 times, and I...
Don't fucking slap me.
Well, you're like sitting there face palming because I'm.
Yeah, because Shimano makes shitty brakes. They've always made shitty brakes. The only reason Shimano brakes were halfway fucking passable is because SRAM shit the bed on guides. That's the only reason people bought Shimano brakes. It's the only fucking reason. Okay.
Okay. Like, I don't understand why that's making you like grovel over.
And like,
because we know that their brakes fucking suck. And their new master cylinder design and their new fucking special fluid isn't going to magically solve the fact that the seals they put in there are made out of sadness and old cheese. Like, the Shimano seals and NX derailleurs, they come out of the same, like, cheap shit available in wherever they build that shit.
So, in Shimano's defense, I think, like, an MT200 level brake, pretty good. They can be pretty reliable for 2 or 3 years, and they're really cheap, and they're pretty easy to set up and everything. So anyway, we know they're leaky. And the first thing I said was, A, have you fixed that? And they said, we've never heard of that before. And then when they got into the fact that they used lower viscosity, thinner oil, I said, that sounds like a really bad idea. It sounds like those are going to leak even worse. And they just weren't pumped to hear that feedback, which I think is weird that they've never heard that feedback. So there's one of two things happening here. They're either so disconnected from the actual tech side of things and having any idea on what their products do in the real world, which would be a bummer, or they know exactly what I'm talking about and they're just told to straight up lie to my face. It's one of the two, and either one's pretty concerning, to be honest. So I'm very, very skeptical of the brakes, especially from the longevity standpoint. So I'm going to let other people guinea pig those things before I do. Yeah, so that's the gist of the XTR. Is there anything that we missed?
Yeah, I have one other complaint, because I saw that shit on a Tuesday, and literally on Monday, a guy came in with a leaky brake, and he had iSpec EV7.946293 blah 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 bullshit. So in order to replace his leaky brake, he had to buy a fucking shifter.
Yeah, and this comes back to all matchmaker shit needs to be outlawed, but continue.
No, it doesn't. SRAM has made two matchmakers in anything you give a fuck about. I don't need someone to pipe up and tell me there was Matchmaker Slim or some bullshit back in the day. But if you have a Matchmaker Extreme, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Anytime, anywhere. And
you can take the shifter off of it and put it next to the clamp.
I will say, SRAM's setup is better because you can just run a discrete clamp that you have to buy, but you can run a discrete clamp after the fact, and then you're good to go.
No, you don't.
Okay, so I have a Matchmaker setup right now on my SRAM brake. And my SRAM brake dies, or I put something else on there. I now have a Shimano brake on my bike. What the fuck do I attach that to?
Well, no, you made it sound like you have to buy it separately. My point is, Shimano has two fucking shifter SKUs.
Oh, I agree. It's stupid. A Shimano system is dumber than SRAM's, if that's what you're after.
No, but my point is, when you buy a SRAM brake, it comes with what you need to hang it on the handlebar. When you buy a Shimano shifter, it comes with what you need to hang it on the handlebar.
Sure, if you bought that shifter in the aftermarket.
Well, yeah, but also, like, if you didn't, like, when you buy an SX group set, it doesn't come with a, or if, when you buy an NX group set, or, hold on, let me go back and find something more reliable.
But do you know what would stop all this arguing? Is if everything was just a fucking discrete clamp, and then we don't have of these arguments.
No, because MMX works really well for some people, and non-MMX, you know, running them individually works really well for some people, and that shit exists, is my point. There's not a fucking part to hang that guy's shifter on his handlebar. Not that Shimano makes. You know, I don't want an email that you can buy some
shit. It's ridiculous, dude. I've run into the same issue. It's absolutely ridiculous with the shifter thing. They could have very easily just made, you know, one shifter with two little mounts that bolt on, and that would have been great. But yeah, it's the whole, like, body pod thing, and you're fucked. I totally agree. It's dumb.
I'm just so fucking over it. Like, and my last little thing with Matchmaker is it's so much better than Shimano's system because, and I understand that the Shimano new stuff has the little slot and all that stuff, but man, my shifter and my dropper are too close to my thumbs. Swap the fucking Matchmaker piece around. Oh, they're too far from my thumbs. Swap them. You know, put the left on the right on the left. Like, it's so fucking simple. It's Shimano's probably made like seven different versions over the years.
Oh,
and now
bad.
Here we are. It took them 7 years to bring this shit out, and they weren't like, man, maybe we should, like, quit this bullshit. No.
Well, would you be more mad at them if they made yet another version of their Matchmaker? Or
they did.
Are you? No, it's the same version. It's the same one.
It's like iSpec.
It's EV or whatever it is. It's the same one.
Well, there's iSpec. There's iSpec 2. And
it's,
now there's
it's not,
iSpec EV.
Yeah, so it's not A. It's not B, it's not 2, it's EV, which was the last generation. It's a carryover of the last one.
I do want them to make a new one that allows me to run a single SKU for a shifter either mounted to the brake or mounted to the bar. And sure. I want them to adopt that and move forward with that in perpetuity. That's what I'm asking for.
Sure.
And they didn't fucking do it. So with their 7-ish year time scale, we might see that shit in 2032.
Maybe.
Sorry, I just really needed to get that rant out because that was the whole thing about the system that pissed me off the most is I literally doubled someone's repair costs the day before. And then they're like, oh, nah, there's two shifters. And he said it like proudly, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And not the rep in particular. The blue in general. Did I ride Shimano pedals?
I don't. They're clearly behind the times in a lot of things. I asked one more question. I said, hey, can you tell me why 25% of all OEM Shimano brake pads are fouled out of the box? And they said, we've never heard of that. So, yeah, I'm getting a lot of, I've never heard of that before.
All right. Well, we've been recording forever. So.
What about all this other new shit?
We'll just talk about it next week. It'll be slightly aged shit.
Awesome.
I mean, what else did you want to talk about? Is there something that was just burning a hole in your brain?
Well, I mean, this is really the XDR show, so the whole waxing poetic doesn't make sense now.
No, you can talk about it. It's fine. I mean, XTR is a fairly big release, whether we like it or not. It's the first thing Shimano's done in like 10 years.
For mountain bikes, yeah. So I listened to probably 5 hours of the Marginal Gains podcast, which is by the people at Silka. So, of course, everything is wax your chain, wax your chain, wax your chain. And you should know the answer to this because I'm bringing this up on this show. What do you think is a worst, like, what is worse for watt savings in the like, pedaling at time trial speed application? Would it be having a well-lubed chain with an oil product? Or would it be having 4 empty gel pockets in your cargo bibs? Your very tight cargo bibs, you put empty gel wrappers into your pocket. Which one costs you more watts? Not waxing your chain or putting your trash in your trash pocket? Your trash in your trash pocket is considerably, like, it is 50% worse than not waxing your chain.
Yeah. I am going to be very, very happy when I never have to hear anybody bring up chain waxing ever again in my entire life. It's just the most amount of time is wasted on people thinking about and doing chain wax adjacent shit.
Yeah, and this is before, like, understand, this is people wearing fitted clothing. And all they did was add empty gel wrappers. But it comes down to, and understand that that gel wrapper, like, from their stuff, apparently your thigh isn't terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. And then when you're pedaling, you know, coming around the top, your leg is moving faster than you are. So, like, in terms of in relation to the wind. So, yeah, like, the next time somebody tells me they wax their chain, but they haven't gotten their jersey tailored, I'm probably going to just laugh at them.
But if you have a friggin' banana in your jersey pocket, it's like the same as a Tarmac SL8 versus a 1980s round tube bike.
Actually,
oh God.
No, I wasn't going to bring this up, but which pocket, Kenny?
Well, you get the idea. I'm saying that
What if it's in the middle pocket? More aerodynamic?
It's a benefit if it's in your middle pocket.
Small aero things makes you more aerodynamic on you. Like a beard and stuff like that actually matters. But people ignore a lot of that shit sometimes, right? Like the type of socks you wear, the type of shoes you're on. Like, that shit's actually shockingly important, but the frontal area of your fucking handlebar is not. It's just not.
And actually, if you have a non-aero handlebar, it's best to wrap it with a thick textured tape. A thinner, less textured tape doesn't create turbulence, and the air actually sticks to the bar worse. But if you have an aero bar, you shouldn't wrap it at all because it's already been optimized.
What we're trying to say is there is a list of 100 things that are more important than waxing your goddamn chain.
Yeah. And then another one that I wanted to bring up is Trek launched their own little mini pump. Cool. We sell mini pumps now, so I get to hear them turn on so people can hear what they sound like.
Oh, if you're not ready, you'll shit yourself.
I definitely almost shit myself the first time, and I've decided that if I ever am, like, way out in the middle of nowhere and I hear someone running one of those, I'm probably just going to bludgeon them with a rock. Like, and everybody's like, oh, you won't waste CO2s. I am not, like, I can barely remember to charge my fucking derailleur. How am I,
And I don't get flat tires often. What am I going to do when I haven't used my little tire flater 2.9 in 6 months and it's fucking dead in my pocket?
Well, I'll give you an argument to that. And it is one more thing to charge here. But truly, we live in a world where, like, if you have a dead phone, it's an actual, like, safety problem, in my opinion. And a Garmin or a InReach or a whatever. In all of my bags, I have just like those tiny little lipstick style USB rechargeable thingies, like the smallest power bank you can possibly have. I always have one of those with all the appropriate cables to like charge my iPhone or whatever, because if shit hits the fan, I would rather my phone work. So if it really comes down to it, you could charge your Fumpa with your little battery.
Or I could just pump my fucking Lasine.
Or you could just carry a fucking pump.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I'm all about little battery operated gadgets. I think it's pretty cool. I talked about the Fumpa 6 years ago and everybody made fun of me, but now look at the world.
I'm still making fun of them.
Hey, that's
you
cool.
And everyone included.
I love it.
Also, my last little point about those is, where the fuck does it go?
Wherever your CO2 goes.
No, it doesn't. That does not fit where...
Not everybody runs the, like, naked strap thing that's just, like, strapped with electrical tape to your top tube or something like that.
I don't either. But my point is...
I just put my shit in my backpack.
That thing is fucking sharp. Like, it's not malleable in the sense of, like, I can sneak it over here. Like, it takes up that much real estate. It's like putting a refrigerator in the back of a truck. Like, it fucking goes there. You know, you don't get to choose, really.
All right. You guys can keep talking. I'm going to read patrons, and if you just keep recording, then I'll just, you know, like, swap the order around when I edit. Because I'm running on less sleep than, well, I don't know, probably about an equal amount of sleep as I was getting before. Can we do patrons now?
Sure.
We have to, in case people tune out before we do that. There's a listener there's Aaron, and then there's another patron _, and Aaron thinks we've been reading his name as Aaron _. No, there is Aaron, and then there's another writer listener _, and they are two people. So Andrea can read. It's just someone's name is _.
Yeah. And that person happens to be in the list.
Don't
next
we
to
read
Aaron.
Them alphabetically? Or
right,
no?
But _ falls above Aaron in their dollar level.
That's why. Okay, I got you. I was like, _? It's like a friggin' U or something. Why the fuck is that?
No, it's literally the symbol of _.
Yeah, like the symbol.
And that's what I was about to say. Should we refer to this listener as the patron?
How about call him the patron known as _?
Yeah. I was trying to come up with a Prince joke, but I couldn't.
I mean, I could just call them by their first name.
I
would assume is their first name. I don't know.
I wouldn't.
All right.
They didn't fucking type that in.
All right. Well.
I wouldn't. They got a fucked up first name.
All right. So our patrons, starting at $10 per month. You've got Zozo, Underpants, Tom P. Ornstar, Tom's P. Timothy, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Tabor Boar Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Mr. Body Catcha, Slaughter Gang Soul Snatcha.
Oh man, I know what that is. Like, I can hear that now. Mike Jones,
Ligma Beva, Leland, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Angry JRA Forever, AJ, Aaron, _. At $11.11 per month, we've got Mustard on the Beat, Ho. Patamelon Disco at $14, Dean at $16.50, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian, at $26.06 per month. The other Glock product. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors. We kudos our own rides at 50. And I encourage everyone to Google what the other Glock product is that is not a handgun. Kenny, are you doing it right now?
No.
Okay. I just heard you typing.
Oh, I just remembered what it is as I was typing it in.
Oh, do you not? Did you guys not know?
No, I knew what it was. I just couldn't think of what it was. And it is a product to inseminate horses.
It's just horse semen.
Oh, it's just horse
semen?
They
harvest horse semen from very prominent. They have like their own fleet of very prominent stud horses, and they'll send you horse semen for a large sum of money.
So is this a separate? This is a horse semen company that also has the name Glock, or is this actually?
No, it is the horse semen division.
That is the horse semen division of Glock.
So, same ownership type situation. One department makes lots of guns, and then the other one is harvesting horse semen.
Yep.
Oh,
and I think Glock
makes sense.
Should have a standardized tagline. And borrow a line from Brokeback Mountain, guns going off.
All right. Well, that's another episode.
Sure.
Should that be the title of this episode, The Other Glock Product?
Yeah, we can 100%. Maybe we can use that. We can use that on the next episode and open it.
Okay. All right, everyone. Well, if that's all we got for tonight, we're going to shut it down.
Yeah, do it.
Shut it down.
Thank you all for listening, and good night.